And good afternoon. Scott Spears along with you here on this Thursday, January the 5th, 2017. Almost said 16, 2017. 12:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time coming up on 12:11. Today we're going to have a great show. We're going to be joined momentarily by Bill Macy, who played Walter Finley, Maud Finley's long-suffering husband, on the hit TV series Maud. And of course, Maud was portrayed by B. Arthur, but he's done so much more, and we're going to learn about that career momentarily. And in hour number two today, you're not going to want to miss it, Bob Barker, host of The Price is Right for 35 years, but a lot of the younger generation remembers him from the Adam Sandler movies. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up a little after 1 o'clock. We do want to mention again that there is a 6-year-old English bulldog that was lost last night, all white, one ear. The left ear is brown. It's in the James Way area, out there by 95 and 23. So the James Way area. If you have any information on this dog, give us a call here, 740-383-9944. If the line's busy, just leave it on the answering machine. But if you get the answering machine, just leave a message and we will get the information to the owner of that dog. All that being said, we're going to take a quick break, come back with Bill Macy momentarily. Don't you dare go anywhere. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 12:10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. And Scott Spears back with you here, 14 minutes past the hour. Do want to remind you again, coming up next hour, a little bit after 1:15, we'll be joined by legendary host of The Price is Right, Bob Barker. So that coming up next hour. But you don't want to go anywhere this hour, because a few weeks ago, we had a gentleman on this show. He is one of my all-time favorite actors, from The Jerk to Maud to O Calcutta to all of the great things he has done, guest roles on the TV series Seinfeld, My Name is Earl. He has been all over the place. We had him on reading Twas the Night Before Christmas, which he was very gracious to do in the Christmas holiday, but we wanted to have him back on today for this 45-minute period to discuss his life and times. And before we bring him on, of course, it's Bill Macy is who we speak of. Here's a tune that might make you remember him going back almost 45 years. Oh my goodness, can you believe it's been that long? Here's the tune I'm sure you all remember.
Lady Godiva was a freedom rider. She didn't care if the whole world looked.
Joan of Arc with the Lord to guide her. She was a sister who really could. Isadora was the first barbara, and you're glad she showed up.
Oh, yeah!
And when the country was falling apart, Betsy Ross got it all sold up.
And then there's Maude.
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 And then there's
Maude. That uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing. Right on, Maude.
Classic television theme song for a classic television series, and of course Maude's husband was Walter Finley, portrayed by our guest this hour, Bill Macy. Bill, how are you?
I am fine, and it was such a pleasure to hear that music again, because I haven't heard it in 45 years.
Bill, do you remember who sang that song? What a great song that is.
Oh, no, I don't remember that. How can I remember anything that happened 45 years ago?
Bill, why do television series, in your opinion, not use theme songs anymore? That's a great song.
Oh, I can't answer some of those tough questions. Let's go on to the next question. Listen, Scott, you know that I'm going to present everything that comes out of me naturally for your audience. This is strictly for Cincinnati and its environs. Is that correct?
Columbus.
Columbus?
Yes.
Is that Cincinnati?
No, we're a little more north.
Oh, I see. So listen, I want your audience to know that everything that I say just comes out impromptu, and if I can't answer your questions, I give you some kind of a ridiculous answer, and that's how I live.
Well, I tell you how we're going to do this, Bill. We're going
to
talk about...
Talk to me.
Yeah,
I hope that your audience is listening to everything that we're both saying.
Well, I so do I. And here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to talk about your life, so hopefully you do know the answers to most of these questions.
Okay, go ahead, start.
Let's kick it right off here. Let's start with the childhood. Where and what was your childhood like?
Oh, gee, I was such a little baby. I think I was so small. I was just crawling around, and I had this little toy, this little toy, and this little room, and put it up and down. Now everybody has these major toys, and the Mercedes, and McLarens, and so on and so forth. I just had that little old toy. And then I grew up into 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 and went to public school in Brooklyn. And I was in love with my kindergarten teacher. I'll never forget. I think about her a lot, even though I'm 94 years old today. And then I went to Brooklyn College. And wait a minute. Don't you know when I was 20, they drafted me into the service?
I did not know that.
And I was in the service until 1946. So in answer to your question, I jumped from childhood to 1946. Is that okay with you?
That worked just fine. What was your position in the service?
Oh, just a stevedore. You know, we did 594th EB and SR in the Army, and when ships couldn't get into the shore, they dropped the stuff into the water. We swam out, and we swam back lugging like as if you're saving something, and they were floating munitions and supplies into the beach. In fact, we made a landing in Dagupan in the Philippines, and the people from the Philippines, I have to tell you this because it was one of the most brilliant things that ever happened in the planet. All of the Filipinos that still survived and still lived came to the beach and took the soldiers back to their home and made us sit down, and they fed us with chicken and rice and stuff. There was more chicken and rice on the plates when we finished than when we started. They were saying, thank you for helping them resume their lives again after the Japanese left and so on.
You know what's just dawned on me, Bill? Earlier on this week, we had comedian Marty Allen on. He's 94 years old. You're 94.
I can't believe it.
You're 94. Next hour, we have Bob Barker. He's 93. And all three of you served in the World War II.
Yeah.
It was really a big effort at that point.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just did what you had to do. If you were called, you went. And there was no question about it or anything like that.
I'm going to back the childhood up a little bit here because I have it on authority a little bit here. Were you born Wolf Martin Garber?
Yeah. You know, the wolf part is in the Jewish religion. My mother... knew of a person in our early part of the family whose name was Wolf. And so they wanted to carry on with that name. And so that name was given to the people who from the Revere, Massachusetts city when they put the birth records. And but the lady next door, Mrs. Stearns, never forget her, said to my mother, "You can't call an American baby Wolf. Call him Billy." And so that's how I became Billy.
And how did Macy come about?
When I became an actor in 1950, there was a William Garber already acting in Austin, Texas. And so I was stunned. I could have put William M. Garber like William H. Macy did. I didn't know what to do, so I said, "Well, use my middle name." So we went to William Macy instead of Martin. And then I changed William to Bill. And so essentially, since I started acting, I became Bill Macy, loudmouth, Brooklyn crazy guy. I just do all kinds of impromptu things when I get up, just like this radio show that we're doing today.
Well,
it's one of the best things that ever happened in my life because somebody is asking me to respond to things. Generally, I walk out of the house and I see people in the street and I say, "Hey, you, come here." And then I start talking to them and I tell them a story or a joke or whatever, you know.
You are a people person.
That's it. That's what I am. Like the Appleseed guy? What was his name? Johnny Appleseed?
Johnny Appleseed.
All right, so I'm Billy Joke Seed.
There'll be another name change coming. You'll have to check that with SAG.
You know, ask me some more great questions because I like you because you're so with it. I didn't want to use the word intelligent because that's sort of like overused and so on. But go ahead, Scott. Turn me on.
All right. Here's something I heard, and again, I just want confirmation. Did you work as a cab driver at one point?
What do you mean, at one point? I did 12 years. Listen to this. You have to understand something about the audience. They have some older people and some younger people. They'll pick up this information and understand something about our country today, the values of our money and so on and so forth. I graduated from NYU, and upon graduation, I went uptown, and I got myself a job as a cab driver because I needed to make a living. I had no money or anything like that. The government had put me through school. And so I did 12 years as a cab driver from 1954 to 1966. And the commission on that time was about $13. It was a quarter of a drop and a quarter of a mile. Or a quarter of a mile, and the tips would be 15 cents. Maybe a Brooklyn guy would give you a quarter, Park Avenue would give you 15 cents. And I did that for 12 years. Oh, my God, you know what this is leading me to, Scott? Can I tell you how I became an actor?
That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, I buddied up with a musician. He was a black musician who couldn't make a living in his field. And I couldn't make a living in my field. I had studied acting in NYU. And one night, we would pay off our commissions and so on at 2 or 3 in the morning. He handed me the script. He said he found this script in the back of his taxi. And he said, "Bill, maybe you can use this." I thanked him, and I took it home, and I read it. And there was one part in it that I thought I could play, a little small part. And I took it back to the producer by the name of Martin Gable, 39th and Madison. I still remember certain things, even though I'm 94 years old. And brought it to him. And, oh, my God, the memories of what happened. The secretary said he's out of town. And so I left, went downstairs. I felt terrible. But I went back. I had to go back upstairs, and I get into the elevator, and a little short man gets out. And I said to the elevator operator, "Who was that that just walked?" "Is it that Mr. Gable?" I said, "Take me down." And he took me down, and Mr. Gable was already, it was in August and hot, and Mr. Gable was already sitting in a taxi, and the windows were all up, and I put my hands on the taxi, and I said, "Mr. Gable, I want to see you." He froze, the driver froze, I froze. Everybody was frozen. And I said,
Mr. Gabriel, I want to see you.
He says, come back at 2:30. I came back at 2:30. What's going on? He gave me an audition. I didn't get the part I read for, but he got the part to play Walter Matthau's understudy. That was a very major change in my life. And I studied, understudied him for about a year. Went on 2 or 3 times. This is fantastic. Went on, and they gave me 2 tickets for my mother and father, and did the play that night. And my father, in row M, stood up and started yelling, Billy! Billy! And all the fans are standing next to me. Said, who's that? I said, that's my father. I mean, that's the kind of family I came from. He was so proud of me up there like that.
Now, had you had
any... that was the beginning of my acting career, Scott.
Had you had any acting training before that?
Yeah, there was a little bit, mostly in NYU, because I'd like to tell the story how I got into that. I was walking along the street of after the Second World War, not knowing what to do, and I see a sign on the sidewalk. It said, Act Now, one flight up. I went up, and I said, what is that? And they said, it's an acting school, and a man came out from one of the rooms. He says, are you a GI? And I said, I was. He said, well, you come to the school, you'll learn how to act, and in the meantime, the government will pay for you as a GI. 2 months later, after attending the classes, he called me in, and he says, the government doesn't want to pay for you because you don't have any prior experience in that field, so you owe me $200. I said, I don't have any money. So he said, you're out. So he kicked me out of school, and I could go to a college because I was a high school graduate. So that's how I enrolled in NYU. And upon enrolling, the professor, Summerfield, I think his name was, he put me in as the stage manager for 4 years because I was about 10 years older than the people who came in from high school, because after the Second World War, I was a little older by now. And so I did that. I did a little acting here and there, but mostly I did work. And I loved that. I just went to work. I went, of course, a nickel on the subway, a nickel on the bus, got to school, did my work, the light, did the furniture, did everything and stuff like that. And that's why the training. And then I jumped into the Walter Matthau episode. Oh, and then I started doing off-Broadway work, Scott. You know, after the year ended in 1959, I was finished with that. I would go back to the taxi, and then I started doing off-Broadway. And what happened was, in 1966, I did America Hurrah at off-Broadway. The salary was $60 a week. And John Claude Vanatali, the playwright, comes back to me one night, and he says, Bill, you look tired on stage. What's going on? I said, well, I'm driving a taxi during the day and doing the show at night. He said, you can't do that. You got to give up driving the cab. I said, I'm making $100 a week driving the cab. He said, no, and I'm only getting $60 a week off Broadway. He said, you got to give that up, man. I said, I can't. He went to the producer. The producer gave me a $10 raise. I gave up the taxi. I gave up $100 for the $10. I never drove after that. But now I had my energy back on stage, and Mel Brooks saw me one night, and he gave me a part in the movie, The Producers with Zero Mostel. And then Norman Lear saw me, and he was doing a movie the night they raided Minsky's a couple of blocks away. This was at 12th Street and 3rd Avenue in New York. And then I ended up wanting to get back with Walter Matthau, who was doing a movie. And I called, I had the agent call, and the agent, and was the same casting agent who was the casting agent for the movie and for Norman Lear Productions. And they used me as the co-star of Maud. That's how that happened.
You know, Bill, what is it? I've asked several actors this, and everybody seems to have a different answer. What is it about going out there and being somebody different? What is it about that profession that made you choose it over the cab driver, career, military man, or any other job you could have gone out and gotten? Why acting? What is it about that?
Well, I had the enthusiasm to entertain people and to make people laugh, cry, or scream, and just have an experience. And I don't need a stage to do it. In fact, look at me talking to you on the radio today. And what is it? Your question is, what is it that makes you? It's the individual. And you know, something about acting that you're talking about, I was thinking about this recently. We're not, the word acting is a misnomer in a sense. It should be called behaving. Because once you learn your lines and you believe what the writer has written, they're part of you. They're not just make-believe. For the few moments that you're involved with the embracing the storylines for the character that you're playing, that's not acting, that is believing. And it's a nice, marvelous experience. Like, for instance, it makes me think that this conversation that I'm having with you, Scott, I'm not acting. I'm being Bill, talking to you, and coming up with all kinds of memories and thoughts. And by the way, I could hear myself talking to you in another level. For instance, I know that I'm not talking to you and your audience like a cultured person would. Like, for instance, I'll just make myself a funny guy and say, hello, Scott. Scott Spears. Did they call you Scott Spears because your family walked around in the jungle with all of those rods, and at the end of them, there were... That's phony, baloney, nonsense crap. It's, you know, I just am who I am, and that's the reason it comes out this way. And whether I can't worry if people like me or not, that's not what I'm about.
You know,
I'm really thankful that you asked me to entertain your audience, and they may take from this interview whatever they care to. You know, I just like to be alive, and you're giving me that opportunity.
Well, and I appreciate it as well. But, Bill, this is always a fascinating question for me because I am not an actor. But when you do a role, you talk about becoming somebody else, that you believe that you are this person. But how much of Bill is in that part? Because if nothing else, they look and sound like you.
Oh, what a funny question. They look and sound like me, right?
They do.
Well, Walter, it must be me then.
Walter Finley looks and sounds like Bill Macy, but how close?
Yeah, they should have called the part Bill Macy,
but,
right?
But was that Bill Macy?
I wasn't acting.
You weren't?
No, I just learned the lines, and you acting when somebody wrote the Maud Sitt. You know, they wrote that. The writers like to entertain the public also. And the acting part would come in when the director would say, really make her sit. And I would go, Maud Sitt! You know, I mean, that's like music. But it's like we do it in real life, just like this interview. But I'm so happy that you asked me well, any question, because it gives me a chance to... I haven't said Maud Sitt like that for 45 years.
Well, we're glad we're at the outlet where you get to do it. But see, this is where acting, to me, gets a little arc, and I'm not sure. If Walter Finley is Bill Macy, because you look and sound alike, the guy you play in Seinfeld, the guy who's at the retirement home, also looks and sounds like Bill Macy, but that's not Walter Finley. So what's the
difference? Correct.
What's the difference?
The difference is that the author gave that character, who was running the meeting to get rid of Seinfeld's father from that compound, was not Walter Findlay. Walter Findlay only existed on the Maud show. And so in the Seinfeld episode, it was like myself now talking to you very differently than I was yelling and screaming just a short while ago. It was a normal adult sailing. Let's keep the meeting to order. And we were running that particular thing. It was still me, of course. I'm in everything, whatever it is. I don't know if that's a proper answer, but that's what it is.
Well, I tell you where it gets interesting. Because there are so many movies now, and have been for years, I guess. If you took a role as Richard Nixon, now, yes, you might look a little bit, but they're going to put makeup on you. You have to talk a certain way, and you're portraying somebody the public already knows. When you get the first script for Maud, Walter Finley is written, but nobody knows him. So how much of Bill Macy goes into a character that the public doesn't know, as opposed would go into Bill Macy playing a known entity?
Boy, Scott. Hey, Scott.
Yes.
Boy, your question is so convoluted.
That was deep, wasn't it?
That's you, Scott Spears. I love you because you're like nutty like I am, you know? And that's the reason that your public most likely listens to you every day, because I can't answer some of your questions. Some of your questions are so convoluted. I'm not trying to be tricky or anything like that. I get some lines, and I look at them, and I try to understand them, and I try them out maybe in the privacy of my own home. By the way, I wish you could come out here. We're sitting in my dining room right now, and I have about 1,800 square feet. I bought the house in 1976. With some of the money that I earned on Maud. Oh, by the way, I should mention this. This is not answering your question, but I saved a lot of money from my 45-year career, and the government said, okay, Bill, give us now what you owe us in terms of taxes, because my lawyer made a deferred tax plan. So my accountant just called me about, what was it, July? And he said, Bill, you're busted. And so now I live on Social Security and Screen Actors Guild pension plan, and I'm in heaven. I don't need the money.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So money
does... even some information that you didn't ask about, but that's the kind of a big mouth I have.
Well, I'm hoping you keep that big mouth up, because I was lucky enough to interview before their passing most of the cast of Maud. Now, I want to know your perceptions of these people. I was lucky enough to interview Bea Arthur two or three times. What was your perception of Bea Arthur?
Okay. I'm glad you asked about that. Wow. We met at the first production meeting, and there must have been 50 people sitting around different tables and so on, and then we read the first script, and I stood up, and after I think it was Norman Lear that said, does anybody have anything to say? And I said, yeah, I have something to say. I'm from Brooklyn. You hired me to play Walter, and you wrote, it sounds like I'm playing Archie Bunker, Irish. I'm a Brooklyn Jew, for crying out loud. And they were stunned that I was able to talk like that. Well, they changed the script. They didn't write Irish anymore. They wrote Walter Finley the way I was able to do it. A month later, after we were rehearsing and doing the thing, and because we were sort of like timid with each other because we didn't know each other well, and I'll never forget, we got into an elevator going home one night. It was just B and myself in this... The slowest moving elevator in the existing world is from the second floor on CBS at Fairfax and Beverly. And it was going from the second floor down to the ground. And I said nothing on the elevator. She said nothing on the elevator. We were just going down, going down, going down. And finally she said to me, Bill, you're like a rock. Despite your lack of humor, you're like a rock. And then we became buddies, and there was a place called the Bagel Bakery on Fairfax, and I would go there every Friday around 10 or 11 in the morning and get a pastrami to go. And I would bring it to her as she was being made up in the makeup room, and she would say, take half, Bill. And I would take half the pastrami, she had the other half, and we did that for 6 years. And it was great pastrami, and it was great friendship, and great respect. She was a very talented actress, and it was a pleasure to work with her. Oh, my God! Do you remember the episode in which I was drunk? I was thinking about this the other night.
You know what's interesting? But before you tell this, Bill, this is funny. We're reading each other's minds. I was doing some research this morning, and I watched the scene where you slapped her in the drunk episode.
Oh, my God!
I was going to ask you about that.
But that's what happened only last night. Can I tell that to the audience?
Tell it. It's an amazing scene.
Oh, my God. Listen. When we rehearsed, because she was originally a stage actress, and I was originally a stage actor, so we got to the side with the director watching us, and she said, now listen, when you hit me in the scene, do not hit my ear, because I don't want to have a punctured eardrum or anything like that. So we practiced for distance and for accuracy of me hitting her on this. If you could hear that, like slapping the below the ear and the jaw. Well, what happened was, when I hit her, oh my God, I'm getting the same feeling right now. I broke down. It was like I felt so horrible, and she said, "It's all right, Walter. You're drunk, you know." And I. Whatever it was, and my God, that was more than acting, that was being.
It's a tremendous scene, and people can watch it on YouTube, but basically, Walter Finley is having an alcohol problem, Maude tries to step in, B. Arthur, you hit her, and then you break down, and it's...
That's right.
It's touching. It's, it's right up there with the abortion episode. What do you remember of that? For people who don't remember, Maude, B. Arthur's television character, got pregnant late in life and had an abortion on television. I don't even think you could do that today. This is the 1970s. No. What was that like?
I remember saying to her, whatever she wanted, it was okay with me. And, you know, that's how I actually feel as a person. I'm married to Samantha Harper. And we met in the show O Calcutta way back in 1970. And I continually treat my wife Samantha in the same way. And the reason that I do that as an adult is that I wasn't so intelligent when I was married to my first wife, Sandy Sprinkling. And that lasted a year. She had a dream, and the bird flew out of the cage, and she left. And then Judith, a second wife, and then I was having some food, and she said, what would you like more than anything after 8 years? And I said, I'd like to be free, and so I was free there. But I learned from my failure as a human male animal with those two ladies how to behave with my third wife, Samantha. And so now I respect everything, not only that she does, but anybody does. I mean, I hate to talk about Donald Trump because I don't know anything about him, but I have to respect what's going on until something occurs they don't earn the respect, you know. But it's very important to treat others in a human manner and stay away from judgment. I don't know how the hell... You know, my conversation with you, Scott, is bizarre, isn't it?
I enjoy it. I don't know if you're like this with everybody, but hey, I enjoy it. You know, something you said earlier on, Bill, kind of strikes me. Now, you talked about the issue with your accountant and how you're living off the pensions now. If a role comes to you and it's something you like or want to do, or maybe it'd be even a radio role, does the money matter? Does it? Is it?
No.
Not at all.
No, the money doesn't matter.
How did you get to that point in life that so many people follow the dollar till the day they die?
Oh, well, you know, I'm not impoverished. I'm sitting in this room, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm looking at the turn to the right, and I'm looking at my living room, and I know there's two other bedrooms behind us. So I'm happy just being alive. Up in the morning, out on the job, work like the devil for my pay, and that lucky old son got nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. I'm a happy guy.
That's how to live it. Why did Maude come to an end? Before we leave Maude, Maude was very successful, 6 years. And
I can answer that question right now. Don't have to go any further. She was married to Gene Sachs. And Gene Sachs met a younger woman and got a divorce from B, broke her heart, and she stopped acting. And then she took a 3-year hiatus, and she overcame the pain and went back to Golden Girls.
Is that? I'd never heard that.
Nobody asked me that question before.
No, I've heard B. I remember asking her, and she said, well, it was just time to leave, and I felt we'd done what we could. And
well, you know, that was a proper innocuous answer, because, you know, many people are afraid to alienate others. I'm also aware I don't want to alienate you or your audience, and I don't want it to come from me, a person who was an alienator in terms of sound, because I have a very big mouth. But basically what I just said, and you said you never heard it before, is that's my interpretation. That the show could have gone on and on and on, because, you know, everybody loved to go to work. But when her husband left her, it broke her heart. And so, but then she overcame it, and then you did the Golden Girls, you know.
We talked about this a few weeks ago when you were on momentarily, but you brought up old Calcutta. Now, in this program, you are naked on stage.
And it was cold. Jesus, boy. Wow.
I bet it was. How did you ever have any trepidation about doing that when they said, hey, you're going to be naked?
Are you serious? They gave us $175 a week. 1970, the director, Jacques Levy, everybody, I just loved Jacques Levy. And he said to everybody in the company, he says, now listen, we've got scenes in which there's nudity. That's what we'll take our clothes off. But whenever you're not in that scene, you must wear a robe or clothing. You cannot walk around nude. So when we were nude, we were performing, just like the seals do or the monkeys do. We were performing without clothing. Naturally, it was not easy in the beginning, because we were sort of like, you know, none of us had ever done that before. But once you were, oh, by the way, there was no language also when we were nude. The author, the producer, rather, Kenneth Tynan, he wanted to show the difference between people. This was his innocence. He wanted to show us that when we were clothed, we were, and verbal, we were profane. When we were nude and nonverbal, we were pure and beautiful as human animals. That was the difference that he was doing there. The old Calcutta thing, the definition of it is, originally he thought of O. Kel coute, a French expression that means, oh, what a lovely behind. But then he thought that the public wouldn't understand au Calcutta, so he went to au Calcutta, which was his own craziness and so on and so forth. But we ran to work, of course. I was younger, 1970, I was 48, and I had never seen a group of people, male or female, nude like that. So it was entertaining in that respect. But the scenes were dynamite. They were so funny and vulgar and profane. And so we enjoyed ourselves. I left after a year. You want me to... oh, my God. You want to hear a story about why I quit the show?
I do.
Leon Russom and I used to play a scene with two guys from the South, and I spoke for 60 seconds, and then there was a pause, and then my younger son, he spoke for 60 seconds, and one of the lines in the scene that my son used was one of the characters that he learned. I talked about the lawn, the grass, the paint, and the fence, and so on. He talked about his proclivities with women. And he said in one of his lines, he said, I learned how to use my thumb. And so this Mike, Mitch McGuire came along after Leon left to do other things. And he changed the word to thumb. He was trying to get a laugh, you know. And I walked over to him. I said, Mitch, use that word because there's no such word in the language. He says, Bill, get out of my face. I said, Mitch, you cannot use... He used the show. I wouldn't work with an actor that would be that bizarre, even though I'm bizarre myself.
So that was it for you. You were done.
Yeah.
You know, Bill, you touched on it earlier on. You're 94 years old. Now, how do we all get to 94? What are you hiding?
Oh, I wish I knew. Well, I eat sparingly. I eat maybe 6-7 times a day, and each time is just before you put me on, I had Samantha made me 2 scrambled eggs, and I only ate, I'm looking at the plate now, I must have eaten about 3/4 of it. After we do this interview, I may have, I don't know, a half a sandwich or something, and 3 hours later, I'll have maybe a rice noodle soup, because I go to the casino and I eat all kinds of garbage there. And I'll eat 4, 5, 6 times, but nothing of bulk, and then at night I may have some olives and crackers and a cup of tea. And so I keep on doing that, and I've been doing it for years.
Well, we're having nice segues here, Bill, because I was going to say, for people who have not seen you in movies or television series the last few years, one of the places you have popped up on television is on these poker shows, gambling shows. Have you always enjoyed that?
Yeah. In fact, I go to the Hustler Casino every day. It's 22 and a half miles from the house. I don't take the freeway because some of the other drivers, I don't know who they are, but they go much faster than the freeway allows. They go like not 65, they go 75, 80, 85, 90, even though the freeway is usually crowded. So I take surface streets. I take Normandy, I take Western, I take Crenshaw, and I take my time. What's my rush? I'm not working. And I get there an hour and a half later, and I used to drive a cab, so I know how to drive, and when I see people on my tail, I just pull over to the side and stop, let them go by, and then I resume getting there. And then I entertain. They throw me out of the casino regularly because I'm too loud for them sometimes. And so it's just fun. I go there, I play a little innocent game with a couple of dollars, and I don't play anything heavy. And it's amazing. They bring in busloads of people. They play a lot of Asian games. And so I play a little hold'em poker a little bit. and come home. That keeps me entertained. Then I come home and watch TV at night just before I go to bed. And I keep on doing this an ad infinitum until I go into the grave.
What would be an instance where you would be too loud, that the casino would have to send you on your way?
I sneezed once, and the shift manager sent me home. You want to hear my sneeze?
Okay, I'm going to. Everybody brace themselves listening.
Achoo! Did you hear it?
I did. They would send you home for
get
that.
Out.
They said, get out.
Yes. And so she gave me a day off. Oh, so wait a minute. In those days off that she bars me from the casino, I go to all of the other casinos, and they're all horrible. They have their psychology of making sure that when you walk into that building, wherever they are, they have Hollywood Park Casino, they have Hawaiian Garden Casino, they have Commerce Casino. They have the speakers in the ceiling, and they have games that go 2-4, 3-6, 4-8, all the way up to hundreds. And anybody that walks into the building that puts their name up on the board is announced when it's their turn to play. Well, that means you hear announcements continually. Not just in your area, like when the game that you play. And so that drives me up the wall, and I had to leave, and I found this Hustler Casino, which is less noisy than the other casinos. That's a bad reason. And, you know, it's a friendly atmosphere. We'll have maybe two or three tables of people having a good time, in contrast to the 10, 20, 30 tables in the bigger casinos.
Do you like to watch yourself on television? Let's say The Jerk with Steve Martin's on.
Damn these glasses. Yeah, I love that line.
Do you sit and watch yourself?
No.
No, you.
And listen, it's a pleasure that you ask me such questions, because my responses to you are so instantaneous, right, Scott?
They seem it.
And so, I don't spend time looking at me. My whole attitude is out, is looking out. And if I see, you know, somebody just told only recently, they said, Bill, I just joined Time Warner Cable, and on station 1258, there's reruns of Maud. I said, okay, thanks. That was it. I'm not going to go home and watch myself. Come on, will you? I have trouble looking at myself when I have to brush my teeth and shave.
Bill, is there anything left in the acting career at 94 you still want to do?
Yes. I'm surprised that I don't get calls because my agent, he says to me the other day, they're using people, the millennial, they use the word like that, people born in the 80s and 90s. But I would just love to play a part like somebody recently said that Carol Burnett is going to have a new show, and they're writing it, in which she owns a house and she sells it to a family. And but she's with the provision that she wants to still live there. And I said to my agent, I went to his office, I said, listen to this story. Let me be one of the members of the family as a 94-year-old guy. And I would walk up to her weekly, Carol Burnett, that is, and I would say to her, when are you going to leave? And week in and week out, I would just have that one line. And whatever the situation would be for the week, they would do it. And I would see her again, and I'd say, when are you going to leave? I could do that forever.
That sounds like a role for you. It should happen. You need to be out there doing those things.
I hope they're listening to this radio show so that maybe they can get in touch with me and hire me to do that.
We'll send a copy. We'll send a copy to them. And every so often you can say, when are you going to leave, and then sneeze. Really up the ante. Up the ante a little bit. Bill.
Scott, when you come to California, you got to, off the air, you got to get my address. You got to come and visit because I want to see you in person.
Well, we would have a good time. We'd go to the casino.
Oh, boy, you'd love that.
And then we could be thrown out. It would be fun.
Could be thrown out, you know.
Well, I'd enjoy it. We'd have a good time.
We could do a mock fight in the casino, and they would escort us out.
Well, see, I'm ready for that. You know, California's a good place to be.
It's a lovely place. It's like the Eagles. Welcome to Hotel California. It's a lovely place. It's a lovely place. It's a lovely place, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Bill, and I want to leave this invitation open to you. I'll give you the on-air number, because here's what I think. I think until you get this Carol Burnett role, which I think is coming down the pike, anytime you have something you want to say, no matter how frivolous, you just dial this number between this time, I guess it'd be 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. your time, and if the phone rings, you just break in, and we will have a moment with Bill Macy to get whatever's on his chest off of it that day.
What's the number?
I'll give it. It's 740-383-9944. Anytime between 9:10 in the morning and 11 a.m. your time, you dial that, you will get it up live on the air. We won't even see you coming. That'll be a real tour de force.
I have a response to what you just told me.
Go right ahead.
9944. Who the hell is that? That's Bill. 94-9944. In fact, I play 9-4 every day at the casino. On May 18th or May 19th, I'm going to start playing 9-5, but I'm still going to dial you, 9944.
Beautiful. Well, I can't wait for the first call just to see what you have to say. It's going to be a big, big, oh, I know. Bill, when it's all said and done, I think you're probably going to go to 150.
I'll be lucky to go to 9-5, yeah.
No, that's only 5 months away. You got that one down. Yeah. How do you want your career looked back on? When people watch you on Mod 100 years from now, how would you like them to remember you?
Oh, what a character. I don't know how you come up with those questions, because I don't think like that. I mean, I have no idea. I think, listen to this. This is a very strange response to your question. Some evenings when I go to sleep, when I lie down before I go to actually fall asleep, I imagine in my photographic part of my memory what my father looked like, what my mother looked like, my brother, my two sisters. That's the memory. I don't have. If anybody would just remember what I look like, that's about it.
Bill, we're going to not only remember what you look like, we're going to remember what you sound like, and we're going to remember how you entertained us. And you're going to keep on entertaining us.
Absolutely.
Now we're going to have these call-ins. Bill, there are days when you come in and do this job in radio where you're bored out of your mind. Any day you're on, I am always upbeat, more energy, and happy that we did the program. Bill,
I love you, Scott.
Bill Macy, I can't wait for the calls. You have a wonderful day, and bet 9-4 as you head off to the casino.
I love you, and I love your listeners.
Thank you, Bill.
Bye.
The legendary Bill Macy, Bob Barker, coming up soon. Don't go anywhere.
Oh, I don't know about 148.
Hope not.
That's outrageous.
That's too long.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine what you'd look
imagine
like?
Imagine what they look like, the wrinkles.
That'd be horrible.
Yeah, it'd be terminal wrinkles.
Ooh, I like that.